And indeed, Rob's lawyer did lay on pretty thick that Helen had suffered from depression and mentioned that Henry had been at risk when Tony protected him from a rampaging bull. But how would such a case, where there's been evidence of domestic violence or coercive control, proceed in a real family court? Well, Polly Neat is Chief Executive of Women's Aid and Elspeth Thompson is a family lawyer in Newcastle. Elspeth, the same judge is presiding in the Archers over the family court as presided over the criminal case. How likely is that?
In my experience, very unlikely. I was surprised to hear that last night. Although judges have transferable skills, it's very rare that you would see a circuit judge sitting in a criminal court and then sitting in a family court the next week.
It's also all happening very quickly. How long would it all take in a real case?
Much longer. I mean, as an Archers fan, I'm very pleased that we're being put out of our misery sooner rather than later. But in the real world, it would take weeks, if not months, to get all the evidence together and get court time to be able to deal with the issues.
Now, how much would a judge, again in a real case, knowing a background of coercive control and rape, even if he or she had not sat on the criminal case, but knowing the background, take account of the father's behaviour in making a contact decision?
Well, there's a piece of law called Practice Direction 12J, which sets out exactly what the court needs to do if they've got reason to believe that there's been domestic violence or abuse. And this piece of law explains very clearly that that includes controlling behaviour and coercive control. And arrangements have to be made, firstly, to work out what's happened and what the factual basis is, and then secondly, to work out whether it is safe for the child or for the parent looking after the child for the child to have a relationship with the abuser.
And how significant would a mother's mental health be in deciding who should have care and control of a child? Because that was very strongly brought up yesterday.
It was, wasn't it? It is relevant, because if somebody doesn't have the capacity to meet a child's needs because they have an illness, that is relevant. But it wouldn't just be done on the basis of somebody saying to her, you're a bit unstable, aren't you? The court would need proper evidence that she had a recognisable disorder that impacted on her ability to look after the boys. And there's no evidence in the Archers about that. I would expect the court to want to see something from a psychiatrist before they made any findings on the basis of Helen's mental health.
Yeah, I mean, much was made of the fact that she had been to see a psychiatrist, although she did point out that it was Rob who'd made her go and see the psychiatrist.
And that was very odd when that bit happened, that the psychiatrist seemed to not speak to her very much about what was going on in the background and just dished out some antidepressants. That was a slightly odd bit of the plot at the time.
Now, Polly, what sort of behaviour would you expect from a father with Rob's profile as a case like this goes on?
Well, Rob, like many perpetrators, has an extremely strong sense of his own entitlement. I think it's clear from the great acting of Tim Watson, actually, that he really feels he has a right to have the two children, and particularly Jack / Gideon, with him. So I wouldn't expect him to give up. And unfortunately, we very commonly see women dragged back again and again through the family courts with various kind of proceedings around the children instigated by the perpetrator. And perpetrators use the family courts as a means to further harass and attempt to control the survivor.
How often are abusive partners found to abuse their children if they are given contact?
There is research that says that the majority of children living in a relationship where their mother has been abused have been directly abused themselves. That also would cover child neglect as well as physical or sexual abuse. I think the other thing it's really important to say, though, is that witnessing the abuse of one parent by the other does constitute a child safeguarding issue in itself. So a lot of children are directly abused themselves, but whether or not that's the case, it absolutely is very damaging indeed to children to live with domestic abuse.
So how, Elspeth, would the fact that Henry actually saw his mother stabbing his, not his birth father, but I mean, he's been given a parental control order, so he considers himself a father, What impact would that have, that Henry actually saw that incident happen?
Well, it would be taken into the welfare balance. What the court's looking at, as Anna, the barrister, said in the clip you played, was what's in the children's best interests, and they have to balance everything up. So the court would have to look behind what led to that. And although it was clearly a horrible thing for Henry to see, Helen will be putting forward a case that he also saw horrible experiences of her being manipulated and abused, which, as Polly's just said, isn't good for a child growing up. And in a way, you can see what happened to Rob. His father seems to have been an abuser, and look how Rob's turned out.
Now, Rob is not, as I said, Jack's father by birth, but Helen did apply for a parental responsibility order that did give him rights over Henry. How important would that be at this stage, Elspeth?
If I was advising Helen, I wouldn't say it was the priority. I would be trying to get Henry back with her as soon as possible and worry about the legal status of Rob perhaps further down the line. But there is scope for her to apply for the order to be discharged on the basis that it's no longer in Henry's welfare, that Rob is recognised as his father.
And what about Jack, the baby, who is his child?
Yes, and Rob will have parental responsibility for Jack because Rob and Helen were married when Jack is born, and there's nothing that can be done to take that parental responsibility away. Helen is that is the situation, and Rob will always be recognised in the eye of the law as Jack's father.
So how likely, in a real case of similar circumstances, would someone like Rob be to get control of the children, or certainly to get contact with them, maybe unsupervised?
I think in the real world there's a risk that people like Rob do end up carrying on having an unsupervised relationship with their children, because it's so hard to evidence and recognise his pattern of behaviour. And even though the bit of law I mentioned before sets out very clearly what the approach should be, and that contact shouldn't happen unless the court is satisfied that Helen's emotional well-being is secure by the arrangements, it's often something that gets glossed over, and the court's aim is more to make sure the children have a relationship with both parents than to apply the law that says the other parent should be kept safe. It's all a balance, and sometimes the balance perhaps isn't done correctly by the court.
And how would contact be supervised if someone like Rob were given contact but with supervision?
It can either be supervised in a formal way by a professional, either at a contact centre or a social worker, or it could be informally supervised by a family member. Maybe Pat or Tony could always be there when Rob saw the boys.
What, Polly, do you think is going to be the verdict in Rob and Helen's case over the children?
Well, obviously, I don't know what's going to happen any more than any other listener. Based on what I think would be likely to happen in real life, I think Rob will get contact. What I'm really worried about is that the contact would be... I get what Elspeth said about Pat and Tony, but I think it'd be just as likely to be Ursula, actually, that supervises the contact. If there
that's
is
Rob's
any...
mother, of course.
Sorry, that's Rob's mother.
For people who are not as addicted to the Argent as we all are.
Exactly. So I think that may well be the case. I think that whatever happens, Helen won't have seen the last of the family court and won't have seen the last of Rob in the family court. And can I just make one point, which is that Helen is very lucky to have legal representation. If she was in exactly the same circumstances but could not afford that, she would not get legal aid. And I think it's really important to say that, because that would mean, and we have found that one in four survivors of domestic abuse with experience of the family courts have had this experience, she would be very likely directly questioned by the perpetrator in court.
But surely the law says that if there is evidence of domestic violence, a woman can claim legal aid.
Yes, well, it does. But there's a gateway, so-called gateway you have to go through. You have to provide certain types of evidence. And I don't think it's likely that Helen would be able to provide that level of evidence. And, you know, what often happens then is that the family court is even more providing a further environment for the perpetrator to abuse. And if a woman's being directly questioned by the perpetrator, as many are, it's very, very difficult then for her to give good evidence and to speak up properly for herself and her children. I think also what Elspeth said is absolutely right, that the courts have a real tendency to view children having contact with both parents as the priority, and what they're looking for is a way to achieve that rather than a way to ensure that the child is safe and thriving.
Elspeth, on the legal aid question, what's your experience of that?
It's a huge worry for somebody like Helen. Since the legal aid cuts came in 2012, this sort of case is not automatically eligible for legal aid. She has to prove that she has experienced domestic abuse, and the ways she can prove it are very limited. For example, being able to show that Rob has a conviction or she's had an order out against him. For Helen, I can't see that she would be able to get any evidence, and she could be, if she wasn't able to fund Anna herself, she'd be dealing with this in person.
Exactly.
I chair resolution the Family Law Association's Legal Aid Committee, and we are trying very hard to get the government to revisit this and change the very draconian way the rules are applied.
Now, Polly, there is a parliamentary hearing this morning where
yes.
you're calling for better protection for survivors of domestic abuse and their children. Why is it necessary to go and plead to Parliament?
Well, we're very lucky that the local MPs of survivors who have been through this appalling experience have been granted a debate in Parliament on this issue. And what we are calling for is for Practice Direction 12J. I know that's a bit of jargon, but it's the law that Elspeth referred to that should be in place to protect women and children in domestic violence situations. We want that to be very firmly reiterated and backed by the government and the senior judiciary as something that absolutely must be followed. We want an absolute end to the direct questioning of survivors by perpetrators within the family court, because that would simply not be allowed in a criminal trial. It couldn't happen. In the family court, it's, I even know of one case where the perpetrator was transported out of prison where he was serving time for an offence against the woman in order to be able to question her in the family court. You couldn't make it up, and that's why we're having the debate in Parliament today.
We'll wait for the result. Polly Neat and Elspeth Thompson, thank you both very much indeed
thank you.
For being with us.